78.6%. I was staring at a girl's sweater. I couldn't, like, focus on the teacher. The teacher was a hologram that day. There'd been some funding cuts, the school band was gone, and so were the alive teachers. I didn't send a message back to Violet. I didn't even listen to her list all the way through the first time. I skimmed it, I fast-forwarded it. Then, like, each hour or so, I'd go back and I'd listen to one part of it. When I got to the end, that was it. I stared at the back of the girl in front of me. With a hologram, like when your teacher is one of them, if you aren't looking right at them, they sometimes seem to be hollow. You see them, and suddenly they don't have a face that pokes out. Their face pokes in, their nose and so on, and there's nothing inside them. If you don't look right at them, they can look just like an empty shell. 77.8%. "Hey," she chatted. "What's doing? I wish I was with you today. I always wish I was with you. Oh, did you get my list? Titus? Titus?" 76.3%. After school Link that day, I went over to Link's with Marty and Link. We were sitting outside near the pool. Link asked me about Violet and how she was doing. I said I guess she was okay. He asked me, hadn't I talked to her? I said I hadn't, not for a couple of days. She had tried chatting me a couple of times since she sent me the list, but I had on my busy signal. We sat there for a while, and Link and Marty went swimming, and we played water volleyball, which was hard with three people. So we stood there for a minute until I said, "Does anyone else want to go in, Mal?" They looked at me. They were like, "Unit!" Marty said, "Sure," and Link said he had a tip for this great new site. They went, "You sure?" I was like, "What'd I say?" They nodded. We got out of the pool and dried off with towels. We went inside. We found the site. It had these meg-ass warnings all over it. It was Swedish. We all clicked on it, and we could feel it tap our credit. And then suddenly, it hit me all at once. It was colored bricks first, and I fell down because they were coming too quick. Then I could start to see the bottom of the sofa. Link was crawling, and his face was taken up by it. It kept coming in wave after wave. The floor was steep. I held on to the lamp, but it dumped me. The static was covering everything, and so when we went somewhere, I couldn't even see where we were going. I just watched the others. From the static, I could see their mouths talking. Violet asked me what was going on with me. I tried sitting up and answering, but she wasn't in the room. That was funny, and I laughed. Marty thought I was laughing at something else, so he got started, too. And pretty soon we were all laughing, and so everybody at the ice cream store was looking at us. We just bought a tub, and I was like, "If I eat this, I'm going to puke." And Marty went, "Unit, how the fuck did we get to an ice cream store anyway?" And I was like, "Whoa, Unit, shit, I hope you didn't drive." Some parents were moving their kids away from us, and Link went to them, "Boo, okay, boo." He spread his hands. There was light coming from his fingers. I pointed and said, "Light." Marty said, "Bright." Link said, "Sight." Marty said, "Night." I said, "Kite." Link said, "Have you ever thought about how a kite is held up by nothing?" Marty said, "It wasn't nothing, fuckhead. It was air, like as in fucking air. Air." We went out into the main part of the mall and went into a music store, but it was really, really, really loud. So we went out and we went down to a clothes store and sat in the dressing room for a while. It was quiet there, except the banging on the door and asking us to leave. I showed Marty and Link the message from Violet with the list, the things she wanted to do before she died. And they read it, and Marty said, "Fuck, Unit, fuck." And Link said, "Whoa, that's intense. She's one weird bitch." I said she wasn't a bitch, and he said that that's not what he meant. That's just what he said. Marty asked me why I wasn't talking to her, and I said I was talking to her. I just hadn't. He said that message was so fucking sad it made him want to, like, fucking, you know, bawl his eyes out. And I said, "Do you think she's being mean to me in telling me about that part with me standing by her bed?" They said, "Mean how?" And there kept on being this stupid banging on the door, which woke me up several times in 1 minute. I was curled up in this ball, like doing a cannonball, but on carpeting, with my arms wrapped around my leg. There were some pants hanging on one of the hooks. We checked a few times, but we all had our pants on, so they must have belonged to the lady who just left before we came in. We thought it was funny that she hadn't come back for them, and we laughed about that. It was good to be with friends. Violet asked me again what was going on, and I told her to shut the fuck up, but luckily I told her that out loud, and she wasn't there, but chatting. We got up and opened the door, and there was this kid dressed in perfect clothes, like with donut rings on his arms, and he asked us would we please leave as we appeared to be under the influence. We went out and sat near the fountain, watching the water, which was interesting because your vision slowed it down so much that you could see each individual droplet, which was fascinating, each one of them falling down and making a ring in the water, and that ring spreading with all its tentacles reaching up and then dropping back, and then the water rocking. Violet asked me what I was doing. Was I out of School Ink yet?
Unit, I said. I am way out of School Ink.
She was like, how are you? I haven't heard from you for days.
Violet.
I was like,
Violet, Violet, Violet.
Hey, what's up?
Violet, Violet, Violet.
Are you and Mal?
I'm coming over.
Hey, Yoo-hoo, hey, stop.
I can't remember if my up car's here.
Don't fly like this, you're slammed. Have you heard about this Central American stuff? Two villages on the Gulf of Mexico, 1,500 people. They've just been found dead, covered in this black stuff.
Gentlemen, I said to the other two, I got to go.
Have you heard about it? This is big. It seems like an industrial disaster. The Global Alliance is blaming the U.S.
I am hoping, sirs, that we brought separate vehicles for, I said, things, vehicles.
Don't fly right now,
she said.
Don't fly, you're meg-jazzed.
No, I'm not.
You're spewing a substream of junk characters all over the place. You're completely unformatted. What are you doing? Why did you do this? Just stay there.
I'm at the mall, in Mal. At the mall, in Mal. At the mall.
Oh, God, don't do anything. Wait for it to wear down.
I'm coming to see you. I feel bad.
You are such a shithead. You don't know what happened to me this morning. And the news, Titus, this morning. I can't believe in the middle of all this you went and got malfunctioned. You are such an asshole and a shithead.
On level 3, said Marty, who I discovered was still sitting in front of me. Of the parking lot, next to mine. You okay to drive? I'll do it autopilot, I said. You sure? I said, the horse knows the way to carry the sleigh through the... I scratched my hair. Marty nodded. Link started singing, ho, ho, elflings, Santa's on his way, which was the completely wrong song. I went up to the parking lot. I looked for level 3. The in Mal was starting to wear off a little. It was mainly just euphoria now. I found my up car next to Marty's. Marty's up car was kind of touched and wrinkled by a pillar. I flew. Once I got up the drop tube, I put the up car in autopilot. I was almost asleep. I dreamed about sweater vests, mainly.
Spreadable cheese, but with a difference.
After the Prime Minister of the Global Alliance issued a statement that, quote, the physical and biological integrity of the Earth relies at this point upon the dismantling of American-based corporate entities, whatever the cost. It is thought that the American annexation of the moon as the 51st state...
Into her drop tube, and it found its way to her level, which was on the bottom, or maybe just toward the bottom, her suburb was. I flew to her street. She was waiting outside her house. She had her hair up in this really nice way. I pulled up in her driveway and left the up car hovering. I opened the door and stumbled to hang out of it. I was like, Unit! Don't go inside, my dad will know.
Big unsteady, big unsteady.
You're such a shithead. Okay, get down from there. Let's spend some time on the lawn.
I climbed down. I had to touch the grass with my heel like all these times to make sure it was still hard. She took my hand. Your list, I said. It will just take about 5 days.
What?
Look at your list. It will just take about 5 days. I mean, for us to do everything. Well, okay, the list before the part, you know, where you become from Fort Worth.
Fort Wayne, Activity 12.
Huh?
Activity 12, actually being from Fort Wayne.
Activity 12 is out of the question.
I'm glad you came back. I was worried you weren't going to.
We're gonna do it all, Unet. We're gonna find the mountains.
Hey, calm down. Have you heard the news? It's awful.
I think maybe if I sleep again, we can start by going dancing. We better wait for the weekend to go to the mountains. I have school, Inc. You don't.
No, I just have morning.
What?
My father's sitting around staring at me. He stopped teaching me. He says he'll tell me whatever I want to know, but that there's no reason for lessons anymore.
I felt like what she was telling me was real important, but the trees were so green, and I could smell the grass near my face. She told me that her father asked her what she wanted to know, and she asked him whether there was a soul, but I just put my face against the ground, and the dirt was cool, and the grass was tickling my nose, and I fell asleep and heard the news talking through my eyes.
76.2%. While I slept on her lawn, she sent me a message.
This is from earlier today, it said. The feed tech response. Check out the attachment.
It was a full feed sim of Violet's sensations. It explained a lot. It was memories from that morning. I tried them on. I was Violet, walking down the stairs in her house. There was a poster next to me with a picture of an Asian lady holding up an old machine. I was whistling some stupid Borecore tune. I took the steps two at a time. Suddenly, I couldn't move my legs. I couldn't even scream. I just tried to grab onto the banister. I was falling backward. I hit the walls with my hand as hard as possible, and then my face hit the carpet on the stair, and I was sliding down on my butt. The rug on each stair was burning the side of my face. It was like underwater. There was no space in me for breathing. I lifted my head up and dropped it. I was lying on the floor of the downstairs. It was dark because I hadn't turned on the light. I was trying to breathe. Trying to breathe. That was when Nina appeared. I clutched at the air. She chatted.
Hi, I'm Nina, your FeedTech customer assistance representative. Have you noticed panic can lead to big-time underarm odor? A lot of girls do. No sweat. Why not check out the Bragg collection of perspiration control devices at the DVS Super Pharmacy Hypersite? But that's not why I'm here, Violet.
First little breaths, then bigger ones. Then finally I could feel my face and my back hurting, and I had my wind back. My legs were in funny places, and I couldn't feel them at all. Nina said,
I'm here to inform you that FeedTech Corp has decided to turn down your petition for complimentary feed, repair, and or replacement.
No, said Violet, me, out loud. No, fuck you. Please, no.
We have also tried to interest other corporate investors in your case.
Violet was like,
please, I need help.
We couldn't move our legs. We were lying there, and we couldn't move them. And Nina was saying,
We tried our best to interest a variety of possible corporate sponsors, but we regret to tell you that you were turned down.
What? Why?
We're sorry, Violet Dern. Unfortunately, FeedTech and other investors reviewed your purchasing history, and we don't feel that you would be a reliable investment at this time. No one could get what we call a handle on your shopping habits. Like, for example, you asking for information about all those Wow and Bragg products and then never buying anything. We have to inform you that our corporate investors were like, What's doing with this? Sorry, I'm afraid you'll just have to work with your feet the way it is.
Violet lay back down in the dark, her legs starting to sting. She called out loud for her dad. She was sobbing.
Maybe, Violet, if we check out some of the great bargains available to you through the FeedNet over the next 6 months, we might be able to create a consumer portrait of you that would interest our investment team. How about it, Violet Dern? Just us, you and me, girls together, shop till you stop and drop.
Go away, Violet said in a burst over the feed.
Go away. Go away.
Nina smiled.
I've got a galaxy of super products we can try together. Please, I'm alone in the house and I fell down. Please go away. Please don't help.
That's where Violet clipped off the end of her memory when she sent it to me. Her lying in the dark, on the ground, in the basement, waiting for her father to come and help. Feeling the pain in her head. Wondering if it was just from falling, or if it was the feed rusting somehow, as if she could feel it rusting brown in her brain.
76.2%. When I woke up, I had a headache. We didn't go dancing. It was already getting dark in her neighborhood, and her father was staring out the window at her. And I felt like a jerk because it was pretty clear he was thinking, my daughter's spending these last, like, precious hours with some malfunctioned asshole. She was sitting next to me on the grass. Up cars were shooting over, back and forth. People were commuting. It was the end of the day. She asked whether I wanted to stay for dinner, and I was feeling bad about coming over and embarrassing her, so I said no. The feed was trying to mop up my headache. I could feel it doing nerve blocks. There was a message in my inbox from Sweden saying they hoped I had enjoyed Cow Kicker, please come again. There was no way I was trying that shit again, because it had a mean attack and a bastard of a decay. I felt awful. We sat on the grass. I was like, I didn't know that they had sent you that. The refusal. I didn't know. You didn't ask. I kept being silent so she could bring stuff up, if she wanted to. She didn't bring any of it up. She just talked about music and told me about some concerts she'd been to a few years before. She didn't like fun music, but sarcastic music like Borcore. I kept waiting for something to happen. I wanted her to do something, like grab my hand. Her father watched us through the window with his lips pursed. After a while, I started to want her to grab my hand so much that I put it on the grass right next to her hip. She kept talking about Diatribe on tour. It was like we weren't going out. I felt like I wanted to bump up against her accidentally so we'd touch. But I wasn't going to touch her if she didn't touch me first. We stopped talking, and she asked if I had to go. I said I probably should because it was a long ride to get home. She asked if I felt better. I said I couldn't feel anything. I stood up and looked in the window at her father. He was sitting with his elbows on his knees, staring at the bottom of a garbage can. Violet walked me out to the up car. I waited near it for her to try to kiss me. She didn't, so I said goodbye and crawled in. She looked at me and started to smile. She raised her hand. I closed the door. I lifted off. The next day, her arm stopped working for an hour, and she panicked and had to be given a sedative. 59.3%. That night I could feel another message cashing. It was a big one. It was huge. It started,
"It's three again. I'm awake. I've been listening to requiems and ordering more. I've been listening to burial rites from all over the world. Some places they dance and chant. Some places they tear their clothes. Some places they play choirs of bamboo clarinets. Some places they scream. In Polynesia, they wail, but the wailing is close to a song. It's strange. Once you start listening to wailing that's also singing, that's also like a ritual, you start to wonder, how much does anyone really miss anyone else? How much are they just crying because it's what they have to do, the song they have to sing? Some Australian women have to fall silent when they're grieving. It's required, and they speak for the rest of their lives only with their hands. Titus, I'm afraid of silence. I'm afraid my memory will go soon. When I try to think about that year that disappeared from 6 to 7, it's nothing. I mean, I can't remember anything. I can remember remembering, but I can't remember anything that happened to me right before I got the feed. I'm afraid I'm going to lose my past. Who are we if we don't have a past? So I'm going to tell you some things, especially the things before I got the feed. You're the most important person in my life. I'm going to tell you everything. Someday, I might want you to tell it back to me."
She kept sending things. I didn't open them. I let them sit. I was walking around School Inc. the next day, feeling them crowd me. It was like something was always spilling. It was always there. I went home that afternoon. In the up car, I was afraid I would look at the memories. They were getting bigger. She was sending them every few minutes. Sometimes something would bleed through. Her father, younger, throwing her a baseball. Her mother wearing sandals and a proton lid. The smell of some sauce cooking. Stories she told from before she got the feed. I would get a few words, something about an ant or a camel or a guitar or some shit. I didn't listen to any of them, any of the stories. I just kept them. I didn't touch them on the way home. They just bled. I got home. I had a headache. I told the feed to shut off the headache. It sent me a message about how much I was cashing and asked if I wanted to open it. I sat down at the table and then walked around. She was bombarding me. Finally, I got a message that she'd stopped. My lines were clear. I went to the kitchen to get a drink of water. I filled a glass. I looked at the window over the sink. I deleted everything she'd sent me. I went into the living room and sat on the sofa. I didn't feel good. I sat on the sofa. I looked at the fireplace. I had deleted all her memories. Later on, she chatted me, saying,
"What's your answer about the weekend idea? We'll have to sneak around my dad because he doesn't want me to see you. But don't worry. Don't worry. We'll be together, whatever happens."
I didn't know what weekend idea she was talking about, so I didn't answer her. The walls of my room were all white. They had hot spots where if you looked at them, posters would appear, but I shut them off. There was nothing on my walls. I didn't do my homework. I went to bed. I lied there face up. I didn't sleep. 57.2%. I couldn't think on Friday night because Smell Factor was crying and running around the house throwing things. My dad hadn't been home for a few weeks, and my mom was really angry and kept yelling at Smell Factor, and he kept running all up and down the carpets. He was directing these, like, blasts of kids' programs in different directions, so it hurt to walk around because he kept getting caught in his beams, like,
"Is your head a square? Point to one now."
"Chucky, have you lost your socks again?"
Or suddenly you're, like, doubling over and it's,
"Robot pals you can keep in your hair. 6 to a package. Give mom a scare."
"Wow, Mick Bragg. Mine's called Ludi."
I was staying in my room to avoid having my, like, brain blown up by Smell Factor's broadcasts. I heard Mom running after him, telling him she'd give him some cookie dough if he'd stop. I sat there and wondered what to do because I was bored of the games I had, and it was just Friday, but I didn't know if anyone was going out or what we were supposed to do that weekend. Mom called up to me. "Hey, Violet's here." She said it like I was expecting Violet. I got up and went to my bedroom door. I just stood there and didn't push the button to open it. My hand was on the button, but I didn't push it. I stood by the door. "Hey," my mom called. I heard her say, "You can just go up. He's probably asleep." I pressed the button. She was coming up the stairs. She waved, kind of pathetic, like I was going to yell at her. I just stood by the door to let her in my room. She didn't come in. She stood just outside the room. I was just inside. She said, "Can I come in?" I let her in. She came in, and I shut the door. "You didn't give me an answer about this weekend," she said. "But I just figured I'm going anyway. I don't know how much time I have." "What?" I said. "I'm going to the mountains. You can come if you want." She was like, "I'd like it if you'd come."
"When?"
"Now. For the weekend. Didn't you get my message?" I shook my head.
"Oh," I said, "no."
"The other night?"
"I guess not."
"Were the memories?"
I said, "What memories?"
"I sent you all these memories. I sent you hours worth."
I looked at the rug. I said to her, "No, no, I didn't get anything, any memories or anything." She sat down on the bed.
"Oh," she said, "oh, great. So that's going wrong, too. My chat and messaging. I wondered why you didn't say anything. Oh, God. Oh, shit."
I didn't say anything. I just stood there. She looked up. She told me,
"I got here in a taxi."
I went over to my dresser and leaned on it. She said, I told my dad I was going to a friend's house. He doesn't know it's you. I figure, what's he going to do? Ground me for the rest of my life? Meaning like 15 minutes? She laughed really short and harsh. I didn't think she should joke about that, because you just don't joke about your life. Especially because it can make people really uncomfortable if you have something wrong with you and you keep bringing it up in certain ways. She was like, are you coming or not? This is my big time. I'm going to really live. She said, I'm going to fucking live. I'm going to go up to the mountains and see things. And I'm going to come home on Monday or Tuesday and be like, I've seen it. I've used every second. And then each day after that, I'm going to do something different. I don't care. Museums, shows, anything. I said, I'm kind of busy. I wish I got the message. She stared at me like she couldn't believe me. I said, if I'd got it, I could have changed my plans, what I have to do. Okay, she said. She was angry. She stood up. She said, okay, I'm really sorry. You don't want to run away together? You don't think that sounds exciting? Better than doing whatever you're doing? We were standing there, and Smell Factor was running down the hall behind us, shooting out his broadcast beams.
Heads up, teen enforcers, because that sure ain't the welcome wagon.
Mom was running along the carpet behind him, shouting at him. She slammed some doors. I think she must have caught up to him. Violet said, it'll be fun. She sent me pictures of a cabin with some pine trees and a fire and two people with smudged faces that could be her and me sitting there under one comforter. Come on, said Violet. What are you going to do otherwise? I didn't want to answer her.
Seriously,
she chatted.
What's scheduled?
I thought about the pictures again, the cabin and the pine trees. I thought about the comforter and her sitting next to me. I thought about me erasing the copies of her memories. I said, okay.
You'll go?
Okay.
Oh, this is great. We're going to have a great time.
Okay. She said, get my clothes, so I did. I took out some clothes and started putting them in a duffel bag. She was all cheerful and kept bouncing herself on the bed and talking about where we were going. She picked up my boxer shorts when I was folding them, and she had this smile, and she put her finger through the vent in the front and twiddled it. It stood up like an elephant's trunk. I watched her. Then she tossed the boxer shorts onto the duffel bag, and I folded them again and put them in. I told my mom that we were going to a concert and that I was going to stay over at Violet's house afterwards, because I thought she would freak if she knew I was going off somewhere without having any real plan and spend money on a hotel or cabin. Mom said, great, have a good time, because she was busy running on a treadmill that lit things up while Smell Factor tried to throw marbles at her knees. Violet and I went out to my up car and we got in. I asked her whether she shouldn't tell her dad where we were going, and she said no. He was being very protective, and he would birth Meg Cow if he found out she was gone for the weekend and with me. I said, oh, great. We were flying now, going up the drop tube, and I was waiting for her directions. She sent them right to the up car, and it sent confirmation. I could feel it calculating a flight pattern. I asked her, so have you been okay? And she said, things happen. Immobility. Then a few hours later, it stops, and I can move. I'm worried about the chat, though. That's new. I didn't know. Did you try to send me things? I lied to her. A few things. They were short. But I didn't feel good about it. I said, you could send the memories to me again. She looked at me real intense. She goes, you can join me. We can prepare. I have this dream that I'll be able to learn to live without the feed. I wish they could just switch it off. Can't they? Not dormant. Off. I mean completely. They can't right now. It replaces too many basic functions. It's tied into everything. She was looking at the ceiling. One little thing, she said. I caved in. The other day, Nina said she'd noticed all the Requiem masses I've been listening to. She suggested some others. Here's the hideous thing.
What?
I like them. She figured it out. I've been sketched demographically. They can still predict things I like. She sighed. They're really close to winning. I'm trying to resist, but they're close to winning.
Just keep... I didn't know what to say. I said, doing.
She looked at me and smiled and said, my hero.
I didn't want to be called her hero. I looked at her, and she was smiling like she was broken. I reached down and turned up the fan in the climate control. 54.1%. It was a college town up in some mountains. The mountainsides were covered with gouges and cables. She had made a reservation at a hotel. It was a cheap hotel, the kind where you always are thinking about urban legends. We went in to the manager. "I reserved a room," Violet said. He said, "Name?" He looked at me. I guessed, "Mr. and Mrs. Smith." Violet smiled like we were in a musical and she was about to break out singing. The guy nodded. He was like, "Yeah, sure, Smith. I don't give a rat's ass. You're Smith like I'm Betty Grable." He held up a scanner. "Hold out your hands. I'll key you for the room." I was trying to have fun. We went out to the room. Violet was like, "What a quaint little place. I didn't know stucco could brown like this." She touched the door and it opened for her hand. She went in. I went out to the up car and got our bags. I like being the man getting the bags. I went in. She was poking around the room. She lifted the covers on the bed and looked at the sheets. "Check the mattress foundation," she said, "for bodies. They sew them in." "Okay," I said, "if you dig the pubic lice out of the soaps." She looked around. "It's the kind of apocryphal story hotel where people usually only stay when their up car breaks down during a rainstorm." I said, "Yeah." She said, "Dead rattlers drying on the shower curtain rod. A man with rulers for hands sitting in the room next door. You know, chihuahuas in the mini fridge." We went out to check out the town. There were lights everywhere in concrete. You could see down off the mountain, all of the lights from the upper layer of suburbs stretching all around for as far as you could see, in loops and half-loops from all of the cul-de-sacs. It was cold out because we were outside on a mountain, and we wore jackets and night goggles. It was the nice kind of cold, when someone else's skin, it will be grainy when you touch it. I thought maybe it wouldn't be so bad, being with her. There was some shouting going on by the college campus. We went into a pizza place and ordered a pizza. We asked the people what it was, and they said it was a protest. We asked for what, and they didn't know. So we ate our pizza there and got some hot cocoa. It was good to have the cocoa. I thought maybe some Kahlua, too, but I figured the only alcohol they'd have at the hotel would be for cleaning tile. I felt like I needed a drink because I suddenly realized that I was dreading every second. We got back to the room and touched the door. It was a whole night we had to get through. She grabbed me when we went through like it was romantic, and she had the front of my coat in her hands, and she pulled me right up to her and kissed me. She whispered, "I want to experience everything, Titus." I said, "Oh, okay." I hoped she would, like, get the signal, which was the null signal. She took off her coat and threw it on a chair. She was going, "I've done some of it before. I had this boyfriend, he played the guitar. Somehow he tricked me into doing a thing or two before I realized his lyrics didn't rhyme." She sat on the bed. She was talking in a way that made me feel like the whole mucusy part of my chest was hardened into a stone and someone threw it off a bridge into a deep, deep hole. "But I've never done the main event," she said. My chest kept on falling, maybe with some ice crystals on it now. She said, "Sit down next to me." I sat down next to her. She put one arm around me. It was kind of awkward because we were sitting next to one another. She kissed me on the lips, and I started kissing her back. Her one hand was around my neck, and she put her other hand on my leg. I could still feel the most, or I guess biggest part of my chest, the lung and mucus part, falling down into the pit, maybe hitting the edge and getting dirty and rolling now with a kind of squelching noise, and I was thinking forward to when it would be over. She was kneading me with her hand, and I just sat there. My arms weren't around her anymore. They were back on the bed, holding me up. She was like mushing me up with her hand. I said, "Ow." She said, "I really want this to happen with you. Right from when we started going out, you're just so beautiful. You lead this life like I've always wanted to. Just everything is normal. We can just be like normal people are, off skiing. We could even rent skis, you know, normal kids. They go off for ski weekends." I said, "Every year I go skiing with my parents. One year we went to Switzerland." "Great," she said. You know the border's closed now for Americans? Now let's refocus our attention.
I asked, have you ever been telemarking?
She kissed me on the mouth to shut me up. She was holding my hair, too, which helped. Then she whispered, I love you, Titus. This is going to be the most amazing night. This is going to drill eyes in the back of our heads.
She was still working away with her hand, and nothing was really happening, and I tried to move away, and she had her arm around me and was starting to look worried. I felt bad because it wasn't her fault she was going to die, so I tried to smile, but I couldn't. She said, what's going on? What am I doing wrong? I said, nothing.
She said, what's happening?
I said, nothing.
She said, I can tell.
She tried again and even worse, tried to be dirty, like going, come on, baby, I want to feel you, and all that kind of thing. Finally, she said, what's going on?
I stood up. She was like, what's the matter?
I said, let's not.
What? What's the matter with you?
I said, I keep picturing you dead already. It feels... I didn't want to finish the sentence. She was waiting, though, so for some stupid reason I did finish it. Maybe because I was angry, and I said, it feels like I'm being felt up by a zombie, okay? That's what it feels like.
Her face turned completely white. I felt like shit. All right, she said. I guess this was a bad idea.
She looked very little down on the bed. I felt really bad. I said, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I didn't mean that.
She said, what did I do wrong?
Nothing. She picked up the edge of the coverlet with her fingers and rubbed it. She dropped it. She was looking what people call askance. She said,
in tests they find huge numbers of DNA strands on hotel coverlets.
I stood and waited.
She said, I went to the moon during spring break to see how people live. When you came along, I thought, now I'll have a boyfriend. Like people have boyfriends. Other people just have fun. They just have fun, and it comes naturally to them. I couldn't believe it when the first night, that guy...
She whacked the back of her own head.
Like a punishment. The first night, that guy, the hacker. It was like I was being punished for even trying, that he...
Now the color was coming back into her face. She said,
then we were in the hospital. They took me away from the rest of you and told me, your feet is damaged. There's a danger it may be life-threatening. And I came down and I took you away and kissed you. And the whole time I was thinking, now I'm living. I have someone with me. I'm not alone. I'm living.
Okay, I said. Violet, I'm real sorry.
You mean sorry?
She looked up at me, with her eyebrows weird. And what that kind of sorry meant to both of us was that it was over, that I'd just broken up with her. Yeah, I said, sorry in that way.
She thought about it. She said, I wanted someone to know me. I thought it'd be like when you're finally tied to a dock.
She thought about it more. She said,
I was brought into the world in a room with no one there but 7 machines. We all are. My parents watched through the glass when I was taken out of the amniotic fluid. I came into the world alone.
She picked up her shoe and scratched the crust out of the tread.
She said, I didn't want to go out of it alone.
I was like, that's the thing. I can't field this, okay? You're laying this whole guilt banquet. I can't field any of this.
I'm sorry, she said, but I seem to be dying.
No, I can't feel this. You were, the whole time, you were just planning this whole eternal thing, and I was supposed to automatically love you always, but I didn't even know. I was just thinking about going out with you, and we would have some fun for a few months. But to you, I was the normal guy. I was magic Mr. Normal Dumbass with my dumbass normal friends. And oh, like the whole, like, oh, how delightful, the whole enchanted world of being a stupid shithead who goes dancing and gets laid. You wanted to mingle with the common people. You just latch onto this one dumbass and make fun of his friends for being stupid while all the time having this little wish that you could be like us without thinking what we're like or what our problems are or that we might not be, like, saving the environment or anything, but we have our own problems. And now you're, you know?
No, she said, really soft and angry. I don't have any idea.
We've only been going out a couple of months.
and I'm supposed to act like we're married. A couple of months. It's not some big eternal thing. We should have broke up weeks ago. I would have if you hadn't been... If I hadn't been what? I didn't sign up to go out with you forever when you're dead. It's been a couple of months, okay? A couple of months. There was a silence.
That's it? She said.
Well, it was spring break. That would make it April, May.
That's not what I mean. I mean, that's it.
Oh, now you're gonna take it all wrong.
Let's go home.
What?
Take me out to your brand spanking new up car and take me home.
What's wrong with my up car?
You tell me, you look worried.
What's wrong with it?
The male goat pisses in his own face to attract the female, and she likes it.
Oh, fuck you, what's that supposed to mean?
Do you know what's going on in Central America?
Oh, here we...
Do you know why the Global Alliance is pointing all the weaponry at their disposal at us? No, hardly anyone does. Do you know why our skin is falling off? Have you heard that some suburbs have been lost? Just no one knows where they are anymore. No one can find them. No one knows what happened. Do you know the Earth is dead? Almost nothing lives here anymore, except where we planted? No. No, no, no. We don't know any of that. We have tea parties with our teddies. We go sledding. We enjoy being young. We take what's coming to us. That's our way.
I picked up my duffel bag. You can finish the sermon in the up car, I said. You'll have a couple of hours before we get to your house. I opened the door. Maybe you can also sing me some death songs. She grabbed her bag. She explained carefully.
I discover that I hate you,
I said. Do you want to pay for the room, honey, or should I? She realized it had to be paid still, and she said,
Oh, shit.
Don't worry, darling. I have, all the money in the world. I paid. I was walking out the door. I felt my credit blotted $520. I went out to the up car. I opened the door for her. She got in. We put the duffel bags between us. We flew back. It was night. I had never been someplace with that much of angry in the air, like it was crammed, like the whole air was buzzing, like all of the lights on the dashboard were teasing us. We were hurtling forward, and it was like we were fueled by how much we hated each other. She was crying. It made her ugly. She crossed her arms on her lap. I thought how ugly she was. Her one hand was limp like a flipper. I realized it wasn't working anymore. I closed my eyes. There was nothing but air in between us. I could say I was sorry. I was almost saying it. We were flying, and I was close to saying it. If only she wouldn't say something sarcastic, something snotty, something about how she had watched us all and tried to be as dumb and fun as us. She looked really alone, sitting there in the seat, with a harness around her, and her crippled flipper hand cradled between her legs so I wouldn't see it. I don't know how I spent 2 hours. It was so awful and boring. I thought about anything else that I could. You low? Said a banner. Not for long. Not when you find out the savings you can enjoy at Weatherby and Crotch's annual blowout summer fashion sale. It was a little embarrassing, but I did order a jersey. I did it real careful, in case she was tracking my feed. That night seemed to go on for hours. I couldn't believe it when we got to her drop tube and went down to the bottom, to her suburb. We flew down her street. There were streets on the ground. They were lit by lights. At her house, I got out and climbed down. Her father was watching through the window. He would see me and know she was lying about where she had been. He came out of the front door. We were hovering in the driveway. I'd gone around to her side and opened her door up, and she was trying to stand. She couldn't get out too good with her arm not working. I held up my hand. She didn't take it. She wobbled there. She was afraid she would fall. Her father watched her. He saw what was happening and ran up. He took her hand. She reached out with her other hand and took her own wrist back from him. She freed her hand from her dad's. She let herself down to the ground alone, all alone. She stood between the two of us, looking from one to the other. I turned around and went back to my side of the up car. I got in. I left. I flew home. It was only months later that I realized that the last thing I ever heard her mouth say, the last word she would speak to me, had already been spoken, and they were, oh shit. 51.5%.
So,
she messaged me the next day.
I'm not messaging you to say I'm sorry, because I'm not. Not for everything. But I am messaging you to say that I love you, and that you're completely wrong about me thinking you're stupid. I always thought you could teach me things. I was always waiting. You're not like the others. You say things that no one expects you to. You think you're stupid. You want to be stupid. But you're someone people could learn from. And I want to talk, if you do. We both said mean things, dumb things, things we didn't mean. But there's always time to change. There's always time. Until there's not.
That was her message. I said, ah, nothing, when Link looked at me funny. We went out to kick some ass on the basketball court. Summertime. When school ended for the year, Link and Marty and I went to one of the moons of Jupiter to stay with Marty's aunt for a few weeks. It was okay. We had a pretty good time. By that point, I was going out with Quendi, and I kind of missed her. We met other girls on Io, but I was chatting back to Quendi the whole time, even though there were some meg delays in feed service between the planets. I told her how much I missed her. We had some good parties that summer when we got back to Earth. Marty got a giant top quark pool. It was inflatable and huge, and the pool was in top quark's belly. It floated above Marty's house. It was pretty funny. Marty had also gotten a Nike speech tattoo, which was pretty brag. It meant that every sentence, he automatically said Nike. He paid a lot for it. It was hilarious because you could hardly understand what he said anymore. It was just, this fucking shit, Nike, fucking, you know, Nike, etc. Everything was not always going well because for most people, our hair fell out and we were bald and we had less and less skin. Then later, there was this thing that hit hipsters. People were just stopping in their tracks, frozen. At first, people thought it was another virus, and they were looking for groups like the Coalition of Pity, but it turned out that it was something called nostalgia feedback. People had been getting nostalgia for fashions that were closer and closer to their own time, until finally people became nostalgic for the moment they were actually living in, and the feedback completely froze them. It happened to Callista and Loga. We were real worried about them for a day or so. We knew they'd be all right, but still, you know. Marty was like, holy fucking shit, this is so Nike fucked. The night after I saw them frozen, even though they were okay, I couldn't sleep at all. I kept thinking of Violet and her broken flipper hand. I kept thinking of her pinching her leg and not being able to feel it. I thought of her lying without moving, but in my thoughts, her eyes were open. That summer was the summer when all of the bees came out of the walls of those suburbs and went crazy, and people couldn't figure it out at all. It turned out that my up car was not the kind of up car my friends rode in. I don't know why. It had enough room, but for some reason people didn't think of it that way. Sometimes that made me feel kind of tired. It was like I kept trying to buy these things to be cool, but cool was always flying just ahead of me, and I could never exactly catch up to it. I felt like I'd been running toward it for a long time. The Deep. One night at dinner, when my dad came back from a corporate adventure with his management team, he showed us memories from it. He said it was great and really refreshing, and that it was just the kind of thing to promote team interface and to get everyone to work out their stop-go hierarchies. They went whale hunting. It was just people and old ships and the whale's lamination, which he said was a non-organic covering that made it possible for them to live in the sea. So he broadcast it to the family. He was all, okay, here you see us in the little whale boat. We've put out from the main ship. We've spotted a whale and we're rowing out to it. This was awesome, totally awesome. Can you feel the spray? I loved it. I kept getting it in my eyes and blinking. That's Dave Perkalex, VP of Client Relations. He's in charge of the bucket of rope. See him waving? Hi, Dave. You can see the head of our Phoenix office there holding the harpoon. So we're rowing out there as fast as possible. It was really rough that day. See, we're all shouting that we need to be going faster. Row, row, row. We have our new intern there pulling at the oars. Hey, Lisa. I wasn't very interested, and it was making me a little sick to my stomach, because it was going up and down, and the water was gray everywhere, and so was the sky. And I think Dad must have been sick to his stomach, because the feed was broadcasting his stomach sickness. All right, so here you can see us harpooning the whale. Oh, Jesus, here we go. Feel that tug. It's awesome, totally awesome.
Okay, this is what they call a Nantucket sleigh ride. You got to be dragged by the whale until it gets tired. Then you can go up to it and puncture its lung. Oh, there, this is later. You can see Jeff Mattson stabbing it. He's chairman of the board. Wow, there she blows, huh? There was this big spray of blood.
How's his wife? Asked Mom.
Jeff's? She's great, I think. Fine, okay. So here we've pulled the whale up beside the ship. This was the greatest feeling. Now, they have to flinch the whale or remove all its blubber and huge mats. Dude, this was tough work. They have to lift the blubber sheets on hooks and feed it into the tri-works, where the blubber, it's all reduced with, you know, fire and heat. It's really hot and difficult, and I felt real bad for the interns you see there doing it. Maggie and Rick, good kids, real good kids.
I heard a voice say, "She wanted me to tell you when everything stopped."
I could barely hear it over the cries on the ship and the smashing of waves against the carcass of the whale.
"She wanted me to tell you when it was over."
All right, said my dad. Here we are drinking a toast. And in the background, you can see, now they get some kind of special oil out of the brain cavity. You have to actually send people into the brain cavity to bail it out with buckets. See? They're all dressed up in rubber. It's an awful job walking around in the brain. Those are Bip and John, two more of our interns. See John with the bucket?
She wanted me to tell you that you don't need to see her if you don't wish to.
I looked for who said it on the ship, because it was a feed noise, but I couldn't turn my head because it was my dad's head and his memory, and there was the sea spray. I kept looking at this, like, 45-year-old VP lady and getting completely turned on. I tried to stop looking down her blouse when she stooped down to pick up some kind of flensing spade. And I tried to look for the voice, but I couldn't turn my head, and anyway, it wasn't there with the interns bailing the whale oil, or the seagulls flying over the boat and charging at the slime that was all over the wood. It was Violet's father's voice.
"I'm attaching our address, in case you've forgotten it. She told me to tell you when it was all over."
"Never mind the rest,"
said my dad, and he stopped the broadcast. "Wait," I said. They looked at me.
"What was the lady at the end?" said Smell Factor. "She made me funny."
"Yes," said my mom, kind of dangerous sounding. "Who was she?"
"So that was the outing," said my dad.
I was trying to pick up the line from Violet's father. I was searching for it, but I couldn't find it. There was just his message and the attachment with her address. I stood up. I said, "I've got to go. I just got this message that Violet's... I don't know. I think something's really wrong."
My father said, "There's a name we like haven't heard for a while."
And my mother said, "Maybe because we have been strutting around in a whaling boat eyeing up the VP of sales." My mom had lost so much skin you could see her teeth even when her mouth was closed. "What about it, Peg Leg Pete?" I left and went out to my up car and got in. Flew out of our bubble and into the main tube and then out of our neighborhood and up the drop tube, then across the surface. People were going by me in streaks of light. The clouds were glowing green, and a black snow was falling. It was miles and miles away. It was like so far. On the news, there were underground explosions that no one could explain in New Jersey, and a riot had started a few hours before in a mall in California and was spreading, with feed coverage of people stampeding for safety and children falling and professional people beating the shit out of each other with chairs and a body floating in a fountain while the Muzak played a waltz. I had fed Violet's address into the up car so it did the driving. I didn't need to do hardly anything. I didn't have the, like, you know, the attention, and I wished I didn't have to sit. I wanted to pace until I got there, if there'd been enough room. My legs felt jumpy. While I got out of the up car, the front door of the house opened. Her father was there. He left the door open and went inside. I walked down the driveway. I stood for a minute by the open door. It was dark inside. Then I went in. There was no one in the living room. There were the stacks of books everywhere and posters with words on them and some plants. I called out, "Hello?" And nobody answered me, so I went around the corner to go to Violet's room. Her father was standing in the kitchen. He was leaned up against the counter. He had on his feed backpack and his special glasses, which were showing him words. He looked up at me quickly when I came in. I whispered, "What happened?" The father pointed down the hall. The hall was dark with wall-to-wall carpeting that might have had something spilled on it. I went down the hall. I went into the room and saw her there.
4.6%. I stood there in front of her bed. The bed was floating. She was covered in discs. They were on her face and upper arms. She looked real, real pale. There were signals going on behind her, beeping and so on. Her hair had been shaved off, and it was just a fuzz now. There were scars on her scalp from where they tried to fix her. Her eyes were open. It was weird to be in the room with her. It was like being in the room with her if she was wood. It didn't feel like you were in the room with anyone. You could stand there, and you would feel completely alone, like you were just in a room with a prop. You could watch the prop and not feel anything, or remember anything about how the prop used to joke with you and how you wanted to kiss it and feel it up. I thought it would feel like a tragedy, but it didn't feel like anything at all. Her father came in and sat down in a chair behind me. I was still standing up. He settled in his chair. I could hear his feed pack creaking. I kept looking at her. He said, "Her speech became increasingly slurred. Toward the end, she no longer could make the kind of sly witticisms of which she was so fond. Your bon mot cannot fly fleetly when each consonant is a labor. She could barely get her tongue to touch her hard palate. She would kick things in anger when she couldn't speak, until her legs stopped working finally and didn't start back up again. Then I could see her trapped in there. I could see it in her eyes. For a while, she had also become," he sighed, "she had become hazy, confused. The hippocampus was likely being mismanaged, so her memory was dim. She asked me about her mother. She spoke a great deal of you. The worst stage was when one could tell she was still awake and almost alert, but she knew that nothing worked. Imprisoned. She was imprisoned in a statue like the Sphinx, looking out from the eyes. Her own mind, at that point, was as small and bewildered as a little fly behind great battlements." I turned around. Words were going across his eyes. He did not read them. I whispered, "Oh." He said, facing toward her feet, "Her mother and I didn't want her to get a feed at all. I did not have one. Neither did her mother. I said none for my family. Then one day when her mother had left and I needed work, I was at a job interview. I was an excellent candidate. Two men were interviewing me, talking about this and that. Then they were silent, just looking at me. I grew uncomfortable. Then they began looking at each other and doing what I might call smirking. I realized that they had chatted me and that I had not responded. They found this funny, risible, that a man would not have a feed. So they were chatting about me in my presence, teasing me when I could not hear, free to assess me as they would, right in front of me. I did not get the job. It was thus that I realized that my daughter would need the feed. She had to live in the world. I asked her if she wanted it. She was a little girl, of course she said yes. It was installed. If they had not installed it," he lifted his hand and held it like he was weighing possibilities. "They say," he told me, "that it was the late installation that made it dangerous. The brain was already wired to operate on its own. The feed installation was non-standard. They have also told me that if I had bought a better model, perhaps it would have been more adaptable. I remember them asking at the time," he whispered. I skimped. I read Consumer Reports and wondered, "What's the difference?" He looked at me and asked, "What could go wrong?" He was glaring at me. "I'm sorry," I said. He asked, "For what? For what I did? What about what you didn't do?" I nodded. "I'm sorry for that, too." "Sorrow," he said, "comes so cheap. You can't blame me. Why, I didn't do this. You took her to that nightclub. But she wanted to live. She told me. She told me she wanted to live." He hissed, pointing at her. "Does this count?" I looked at her. She was completely calm. She didn't move. There was a beeping. I remembered her in the hospital in the moon, laughing, throwing hypodermic needles at a picture of a man with no skin. And then he began sending me shots of memory. I saw her gagging when parts of her throat stopped working. I saw her lying partway on the bed, partway on the floor, tangled in the sheets, her eyes open but not blinking. I saw her thrashing on the mattress, mooing like a cow for mercy. I rolled her over with his hands. I rolled her over, and the back of her pajamas were black and wet with her shit. I started to clean her. I saw her pleading with her eyes. The room smelled like her urine, like something hot and just starting to bud. I began to cough and came out of the memories. He was sitting there, staring at me. "What a nice visit," he said. "So kind of you to come." "Stop it," I said. "You've done your duty. Why don't you go along and play your games?" said her father. "We're the land of youth, the land of opportunity. Go out and take what's yours." "I'm not a jerk," I said. "We Americans," he said, "are interested only in the consumption of our products. We have no interest in how they were produced or what happens to them." He pointed at his daughter. "What happens to them once we discard them, once we throw them away?" "I didn't," I said. "I didn't throw her away." "And the worst thing," he said, "is that you made her apologize. Toward the end, I didn't say anything to her, but she told me she was apologizing to you for what she said, for how she behaved. You made her apologize for sickness, for her courage. You made her feel sorry for dying." "I'm sorry." "You're sorry." He stood up. He was taller than me. Thin, real thin, but tall with these big, loose hands. He said, "Why don't you go back to your friends, the ones who teased her?" "They didn't. It's almost time for foosball. It will be a gala. Go along, little child. Go back and hang with the Eloi."
"What are the Eloi?"
"It's a reference," he said, snotty. "It's from The Time Machine, H.G. Wells." I stepped closer to him. "What does it mean?" I asked. "Because I'm sick of..." "Read it. I'm sick of being told I'm stupid. So read it and you'll know." "Tell me." "Read it. Tell me." "You can look it up. You can tell me. Will you ever open your eyes?" I yelled, "Fuck you! Fuck you! You can fucking tell me!" He grabbed my shirt. I didn't expect that. His big, loose hand was on my shirt. He was yelling like a little kid. He was yelling, "No, fuck you! Fuck you forever and forever and forever! Fuck you forever and ever!" I pushed at his arms. His fingers were wound up in the fabric. He was crying, "Fuck you forever and ever and ever! Forever and ever!" I pushed his arm away. I went for the door. He was just crying and saying, "Fuck you forever and ever, forever and ever." Before the door shut, I heard him say to her, "You couldn't hear that, Vi, could you? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You didn't hear that." I walked so fast I almost ran through the house. I stumbled sometimes. There was a special on draft pants at Multitude. There was a preview of the season opener of Clang. I ran out to the driveway. I went to my up car. I didn't fly. I didn't go anywhere. I sat in the up car. It nudged me and asked me where I wanted to go. I didn't answer. I sat. I sat. Finally, I told it I wanted to go home. It took me. Miles of suburban bubbles, the shafts, the tubes, the pods, Pennants advertising malls, trailer parks on miles of concrete with window boxes covered in ash. Up cars flashing past, their prices speaking to me in my head. At home, I walked around my room. Out in the hall, I could hear Smell Factor playing action figures. I could hear him make explosions with his mouth. I sat on my floor. I tore at my pants. I was trying so hard to get them off that they ripped. I took off my sweatshirt. I threw my boxer shorts against the wall. I was naked, completely naked. I sat on the rug. I sat in the middle of the floor. I could smell my own sweat from my folded places. I sat there. I ordered the draft pants from Multitude. It was a real bargain. I ordered another pair. I ordered pair after pair. I ordered them all in the same color. They were slate. I was ordering them as quickly as I could. I put in my address again and again. I was shivering with the cold on my butt. My arms were around my legs.
I ordered pants after pants. I put tracking orders on them. I tracked each one. I could feel them moving through the system. Spreading out from me in the dead of night, I could feel credit deducted and the warehouse alerted and packing. I could feel the packing and the shipment, the distribution, the transition to FedEx, the numbers. Each time, the order number, my customer number traded like secret words at a border, and the things all went out, and I could feel them coming to me as the night passed. I could feel them in orbit. I could feel them in circulation all around me like blood in my veins. I had no credit. I had nothing left in my account. I could feel the pants winging their way toward me through the night. I stayed up all through the early morning, shivering, ordering, ordering, and was awake at dawn when I put on clothes and went up to the surface and watched the shit-stupid sun rise over the whole shit-stupid world. 4.6%. 2 days later, I went to visit her. I dressed real careful, like for a special occasion. While I was driving there, I kept fiddling with my shirt. I tried the sleeves rolled up and rolled down at different places on my biceps. When I got to the house, the father opened the door. The father stepped away and let me in. He didn't say anything. He walked into the kitchen and out the back door. I went into Violet's room. She just lay there. She still had the discs all over her. Someone had laid her arms outside of the sheets. Her eyes were still open. I sat beside her. I had an hour before I had to go meet Quendi. I put my hands on Violet's arm. I said, "Violet, you might be able to... Maybe you can hear in there," I said. "So I came over to... I thought I'd tell you the news, what's going on, just talk to you. And also found some things like you like. The strange facts about things in other places, I thought you'd like to hear." I tried to talk just to her. I tried not to listen to the noise on the feed, the girls in wet shirts offering me shampoo. I told her stories. They were only a sentence long, each one of them. That's all I knew how to find. So I told her broken stories, the little pieces of broken stories I could find. I told her what I could. I told her that the Global Alliance had issued more warnings about the possibility of total war if their demands were not met. I told her that the Emperor Nero from Rome had a giant sea built where he could keep sea monsters and have naval battles staged for him. I told her that there had been rioting in malls all over America and that no one knew why. I told her that the red-suited Santa Claus we know, the regular one, was popularized by the Coca-Cola company in the 1930s. I told her that the White House had not confirmed or denied reports that extensive bombing had started in major cities in South America. I told her, "There's an ancient saying in Japan that life is like walking from one side of infinite darkness to another on a bridge of dreams. They say that we're all crossing the bridge of dreams together, that there's nothing more than that, just us on the bridge of dreams." Outside her window, her father was working in the garden. He was on his hands and knees, pulling out pieces of grass from where the flowers were. His feed pack glittered in the sun. I watched him. The sky was blue over him. He patted the dirt with his hands. And I whispered, "Violet, Violet, there's one story I'll keep telling you. I'll keep telling it. You're the story. I don't want you to forget. When you wake up, I want you to remember yourself. I'm going to remember. You're still there as long as I can remember you, as long as someone knows you. I know you so well, I could drive a simulator. This is the story." And for the first time, I started crying. I cried, sitting by her bed, and I told her the story of us. "It's about the feed," I said. "It's about this meg-normal guy who doesn't think about anything until one wacky day when he meets a dissident with a heart of gold," I said. "Set against the backdrop of America in its final days, it's the high-spirited story of their love together. It's laugh-out-loud funny, really heartwarming, and a visual feast." I picked up her hand and held it to my lips. I whispered to her fingers, "Together, the two crazy kids grow, have madcap escapades, and learn an important lesson about love. They learn to resist the feed. Rated PG-13
for language, I whispered, and mild sexual situations. I sat by her side, and she stared at the ceiling. I held her hand. On a screen, her heart was barely beating. I could see my face crying in her blank eye.
Feeling blue? Then dress blue. It's the Blue Jean Warehouse's final sales event. Stock is just flying off the shelves at prices so low, you won't believe your feed. Everything must go. Everything must go. Everything must go. Everything must go. Everything must go.
This is David Aaron Baker. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Feed by M.T. Anderson. This program was produced and directed by Robert Kessler. Mixed design by Scott Cresswell. Executive producer, Orly Moskowitz. Text copyright 2002 by M.T. Anderson. Production copyright 2003 by Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.